America's democracy hangs in the balance. While you're tuned into politics, Greer McVeigh, host of the Capital G podcast, will help you make sense of the news of the day and, more importantly, understand how what goes on in our nation's capital is important to you and your family. Greer shares insights and opinions in the lead up to the election, and then will help guide you through the anticipated aftermath and into the next administration. That's politics with a capital G.
Hello, welcome to the Capital G podcast. I am your host, Greer McVeigh. And there's so much going on right now in the Capitol. Well, not just in the Capitol. It's going on in Georgia, and it's going on in New York. It's going on everywhere, apparently, that Donald Trump feels that he needs to visit. I'm going to catch you up on where we are right now. But let's hear how our friends over at Morning Joe described it.
The New York Times, the former president has told friends and associates he welcomes the idea of being paraded around by the authorities as long as he's surrounded by the media. He also reportedly mused openly about whether to smile for the cameras during that possible perp walk and described the potential situation as a fun experience, Joe.
So that might be fun in front of the cameras for him, but I think it's different when you get in there and you're having, I could be wrong, but
you know,
I wouldn't know, but having your fingerprint taken and your picture taken.
You know, we call that, Mika.
What?
That's called whistling past the graveyard. He's not looking forward to any of it. He's horrified.
No, he's not.
He's just talking big. The walls are closing in. As has been said before, this time, my God, look at all of it. They have. Now, I want to get back to the Republican lie. The main Republican lie right now is they're only charging Donald Trump. This is the politicalization of this statute of data. No.
Yeah, no. It isn't just being political and, oh, we just don't like Donald Trump. Because I tell you what, there are a whole lot of people in D.C. that the Democrats don't like. This isn't happening to them. So that's another story. And as for Mika Brzezinski, who says, you know, he's going to be fingerprinted and he's going to be, yeah, he's also going to be strip searched. So bend over and cough. This is not the way Donald Trump envisions his authoritarian reign over the United States. But here we are. We've had a number of investigations and cases against Donald Trump, and so many people come to me and they're like, you know what, Greer, he's going to walk, he's going to get away with it, he's going to, because he's quote unquote Teflon Don. People are just very, it's like he's slippery, he just gets through. And yes, I will absolutely concede that he's turned, you know, a full 25% of the country into Trump zombies, or what, you know, they just are like, okay, this is what Trump wants. And, you know, people are putting their law licenses on the line and their businesses on the line. We've got 1,000 people so far who have been convicted for their participation in the January 6th, 2021 insurrection at the Capitol. You know, all in service to Donald Trump. He won, he needs to win. Joe Biden didn't win. Joe Biden is not president. Trump is gonna come back. He's the resurrection, all of it. And each step of the way, what Trump has done is raised money off of it. He's taken advantage of people. He's lied to people. He's lied to his own family, his supporters, his lawyers. So I'm going to go through a little bit of where we are right now, just to make sure you're caught up. Because as early as today, what is today? Today is March 23rd. Also happens to be my son's birthday. Happy birthday, Donovan. But today happens to be the day that Donald Trump may be indicted. And I say may because there's so many cases and so many moving parts, and so many things. It's hard to keep track of exactly which charges and where, and, you know, but whether or not any of it will stick, it all has to start with formal charges. So it has to start with an arraignment. This past weekend, on Saturday morning, it was overnight, Friday night, Saturday morning, Donald Trump tweeted, well, he didn't tweet, he truthed on his Truth Social platform. I think they call them truths when you, what the equivalent of a tweet is a truth. So he truthed, past tense, that he was going to be arrested on Tuesday. And that's sort of where this started. So in New York, there are basically four relatively big cases going on right now. And then there are some additional ones, and then there may be some investigations that we don't even know about. New York, the Stormy Daniels case is basically when, before Donald Trump became president, when he was running for president, Stormy Daniels came forward, or she went to Trump and she says, hey, I'm going to go public with my story that you and I had an affair. I guess if you don't pay me, you can pay me for my silence. So he paid through Michael Cohen, his lawyer at the time, $130,000 to keep her quiet. Then that money, Michael Cohen paid it, Trump paid it back, and sort of that payment is what we're calling hush money payment. That payment led to potential criminal charges. It definitely led to them for Michael Cohen, because Michael Cohen got sentenced to 3 years in prison. So there's the Stormy Daniels case, and I'll get back to that in a moment. Then there's the January 6th insurrection. So when Trump lost in 2023, and I cannot believe we're still talking about this, but when he lost to Joe Biden in 2020 and refused to accept that he lost, he started this big lie. And we talked a lot about that at the time. And yes, I've been, you know, a little offline lately, but I'm trying to get back into the swing of this. But he, you know, started this big lie, got all of his supporters to believe that the election was rigged and stolen and, you know, woe is him and all that. There were a series of dates that follow an election when, you know, when ballots are counted and certified and recounted and all that. And then when the Electoral College officially cast their votes, and then January 6th, which is when Congress receives the votes and it becomes official, who the winner is. And Trump got his people all agitated because all those dates passed and nothing went in his favor, the court cases, all that. Then we find ourselves at January 6th. He tells them to show up. Rudy Giuliani's like, trial by combat. We're going to take names and kick ass, was what Mo Brooks said. And then Trump is like, we got to go to the Capitol and we got to fight like hell. Those were his words. And people did it. They marched down there. Trump said he'd go with them. He did not. They went down there. They broke into the Capitol. The rest, as they say, is history. But now all those people, not all, most of those, many of those people have, they left the Capitol that day, but they've been rounded up and brought back and have now been, you know, tried, like 1,000 of them have been convicted. So, you know, maybe we'll figure out what our big number of today is. Another case against Trump that's somewhat related to the election is down in Georgia. So again, in the lead up to January 6th, while Trump is trying to do all these things, he's working the phones, he's calling people, he's talking to elected officials in different states saying, hey, you need to, you know, do whatever, overturn the election, don't count the votes. One of the things that Trump did was called Georgia, Brad Raffensperger, who's the Secretary of State, and he's like, you need to find me 11,780 more votes. That's one, that's just one more than we'll need, just because he had lost to Joe Biden. He's like, just find me the votes. That's illegal. You cannot conspire to overthrow an election. So, and that involved many people. Lindsey Graham had already made a trip down there and had already made calls down there. Mark Meadows, the chief of staff, had gone down to Georgia in person. They had this whole scheme where they had fake electors, not just in Georgia, but other states. So we've got these other people who are going to say that they're the electors and they're going to put forth their ballots instead of the real electors in the Electoral College system. So there were all these schemes and plays. So Fani Willis, who's the DA down there in Atlanta, she's like, you know what, not on my watch. So she's got an investigation going and she's, you know, making progress. As a matter of fact, in court, it's probably been about 3 weeks now, maybe even a month now. She told the judge, because after she impaneled a special grand jury, they heard the case, they came back with their recommendations of the multiple people. We don't have a number, but we're thinking at least a dozen people that they're saying should be indicted. Sounds like RICO. And again, we'll talk about that in just a minute. But the grand jury, the special grand jury came back with recommendations for who should be indicted. Fani Willis told the judge, she's like, you know, please don't make this public right now. One, because we want whoever we do ultimately, we may indict to have a fair election. You know, in America, you are innocent until proven guilty and you're entitled to the presumption of innocence until proven guilty and you need a free and fair trial. So, but she also said, tellingly, that indictments were imminent. She's used the word imminent. Well, it's been about a month now, so and nobody has been indicted yet that we know of. I mean, I suppose there could be like a sealed indictment, but I think reporters would probably know if something had been, even if it was sealed, they would know that something had been done. So imminent could mean, when I hear the word imminent, I always think, in a minute, right? So it could be any minute that somebody is indicted down there. And that could be today, it could be tomorrow, it could be, you know, the next day, whatever. So it's imminent. And then there is this whole business with the documents down in Mar-a-Lago. So Trump lives at a resort in Florida called Mar-a-Lago. And it was discovered that he had documents, many documents, but in particular classified documents and top secret documents that he should not have had. So when he left the White House, first of all, classified top secret documents should always remain in a secure location. So you don't just have them all willy-nilly, you know, in your backpack or in your briefcase or in your duffel bag on your way out for the weekend. And I'm just going to take a few of these files and I'll read them. And, you know, that's not supposed to happen at all. If you're authorized to read them, typically you would read them in a secure location. Depending on the level of classification, that secure location could be a SCIF, you know, a secure compartmentalized locate, like literally, like a, you know, you go into a safe room that has been outfitted and debugged and all that, and you read the documents, and then they, you know, they give them to you, you read them, and then they take them away. In some other cases, I'm sure, especially if you're president, you get to see things in a less secure location, but they are not your property. When you stop being president, None of that stuff, all the gifts, all the, none of that. Those things do not belong to you. You are a servant to the American people and you are serving your country. But those documents and everything that you produce as whatever elected official, whatever you are, president, vice president, secretary of state, whatever, those documents belong to the American people. Traditionally, if there are things that you want as president, you could, you know, presidents now have libraries. They create libraries that memorialize their presidency and sort of tell the history of what was happening during their term, maybe shortly before, shortly after, but how their presidency impacted the world. If you want those documents to be in your presidential library, excuse me, you would, first of all, you give them up, you know, to the National Archives, and you give them up, and then you request them, and then they vet them, and they do whatever, and ultimately, sure, you know, if something is not still classified, it can be declassified, but eventually, they will then hand them over, but they're responsible for chronicling, documenting, cataloging, and categorizing all the material, and then they will loan it to your presidential library. Well, Trump just decides, I'm gonna take it, and it's mine, and what's mine is mine, it's mine, it's all mine, and you can't have it. So he takes these things down to Mar-a-Lago, where eventually, and as I understand it, there were a couple of things in particular that sort of everybody knew existed and the National Archives had not received. So they started questioning like, oh, where is blah, blah? Where is, you know, you need to turn these things over. I think one of the things I feel like I read a while back was the soccer ball that Putin gave Trump during when they were in Helsinki, which is, don't get me started on Helsinki, but look it up. But it's like there was some, it wasn't the soccer ball. The soccer ball is a day. It was the letter from Kim Jong-un. When Trump said that Kim Jong-un and I of North Korea have been exchanging love letters, and he wrote me a letter, and they're like, where is this? We don't have this letter. This letter has not been turned over. That was what sort of prompted it. And then there became this more of an investigation and what should have been turned over. So they go to Trump and they try to get it back. He does not turn it over. Time passes. They give him more time. Then they give him deadlines. Then they ask. And you know, so they go through this back and forth that took it, you know, the better part of a year from what I can tell. Eventually, you know, the FBI gets involved, whatever. And then eventually they issue a search warrant for the things. So they go to, because somebody, don't know who, maybe a housekeeper, maybe a family member, maybe Jared, who knows, but somebody, maybe Ivanka, maybe Ivana before she died of suspicious circumstances. Anyway, somehow in order to get the search warrant, you have to have enough credible evidence to present to a judge to say, we believe a crime has been or is in the process of being committed. We know where to look, where the information is. So you have to have some pretty detailed information to get the search warrant to go, which is what happened. They went and they searched Mar-a-Lago, and lo and behold, they find all these documents. At that point, then it was like, oh, Trump was the one who, you know, he keeps blaming everybody for turning for leaking and, you know, the FBI leaked. No, you leaked. You went on social media and then you said, the FBI is here raiding my home. They've broken in. It's an invasion or whatever he called it. So the reality is he got busted. He had the documents. They took the stuff. But then they're like, this isn't all of it. So then they asked for the additional. And then he and his lawyers were like, no, that's everything. We've given you all that we've got. That's it. We've done a search. And I'm going to get back to the lawyers and their we've done a search bit. But they're like, this is it. Well, they came back and then they found more because he was lying, because he had more. So anyway, so that then, of course, a few months later, two, three, however many months later, Joe Biden's team was like, oh, you know, we were at Joe Biden's house and we, you know, found this classified document. So, of course, that made everything all sort of murky, right? But Joe Biden turned over what he had. Then he welcomed the FBI to come and do a more thorough search. So he had whatever he had. It wasn't the same high level. It wasn't as high a level of classification as what Trump had. Trump had like, you know, eyes only, you know, only like you got to see it in a skiff and all that. Joe just had like classified docs, but not top secret. But nevertheless, he had documents he shouldn't have had, which of course Republicans made hay about. They're like, oh, Trump, you know, why are you, you know, everybody's got documents. But when it was Biden, it was like, oh no, lock him up. Then the FBI went to Joe Biden's house and then they went to his vacation house and found a few more. I think ultimately they found about a dozen documents with Biden. Trump had like 300 or something, like a vastly larger number. Then turns out Mike Pence had documents. So Mike Pence has, you know, whatever his documents are, but similar to Joe, he was like, oh, we found this, we're turning it over. Come and investigate. You feel free to come and investigate my house, my vacation home, whatever, my office. So Joe and Mike Pence had sort of about the same amount of stuff, but the way they handled it was different. The difference with Trump was that he lied about it, that he misrepresented, that he tried to obstruct justice. He interfered with their ability to do the investigation. He had people lying for him. He had people attesting, signing documents, attesting to the accuracy that they had done a full search and nothing existed. Then they went and found more stuff. So Trump's sort of in a, not sort of, Trump is in a different category altogether. So keep that in the back of your mind. So we basically have those four cases. There's also this trial that's about, you know, that's about to start with the rape of E. Jean Carroll. And there are some assault charges from some other women that are going to get to be introduced in that. But I'm not really going to talk about that today. But, you know, there are some lingering sexual assault allegations and pending trials. There is the Manhattan DA is the one that's doing the hush money campaign. But the Letitia James has charged the Trump companies with fraud and tax crimes and all that. Trump's financial guy, Weisselberg, is sitting in prison as I speak in Rikers Island on other financial charges. All of this is stuff Trump knew, Trump was a part of, Trump signed off on. The Alan Weisselberg charges, the ones that he's in jail on, have to do with how he was paid. And basically he was effectively paid under the table or paid in kind. So Trump was actually, instead of giving Weisselberg a salary, you know, here you make whatever, $250,000 a year or $500,000, what, I don't know, whatever he might make. Instead of me just paying you $500,000 a year, I'm going to pay your rent, your New York rent, which let's just say is, I don't know, $10,000 a month. So that's $120,000 a year. But instead of me giving you that $120,000, I'm just going to pay your rent or your mortgage or your whatever. I think it was rent. And if I pay your rent, then I will just write off the $120,000 that I'm paying for your rent in this example as a business expense, right? I maintain an apartment in Manhattan for my executives or for business purposes, somebody's living there, but he gets to write the whole thing off. So rather than it being calculated for tax purposes as a, you know, as payroll, it's charged differently, and then it's recorded differently, and then they're not paying taxes on it. Instead, they're getting tax refunds. So there's all of that. So there are all these, you know, there are other sort of financial dealings. One of the things Michael Cohen, again, Trump's former lawyer and quote unquote fixer, talked about is that, you know, Trump will inflate the value of his properties when he's trying to get a loan or do certain kinds of business. He's like, yeah, I'm worth this or this property or this collateral is worth this amount. And, you know, it's all of a sudden worth $1 million when I want a loan against it. But then when it's time to pay taxes on it, oh yeah, it's only worth $32,000. That's the kind of thing that he does. So all that is swirling around. So if you find that you're having a hard time keeping up with what is what or which is which, it's because there's just so much. Anyway, so when Trump indicated Saturday morning, that I'm getting arrested on Tuesday, that was in regard to the Stormy Daniels hush money situation. And which when Alan Bragg, who's the DA, when he had come into office, initially he declined to charge Trump. And then like a year passed, and then all of a sudden it's like he impanels a grand jury to look at this. So, you know, we still don't know what happened or what the difference is between when he initially declined to charge and then now when he's like probably going to charge. So this is sort of appears to be the most imminent case. So last week, so the grand jury's been meeting, they're coming to a close, and it's time for them to vote on whether or not to indict or whether or not there are sufficient charges to indict. As some say, you can indict a ham sandwich. It's easy. It is relatively easy to get an indictment because what is presented to the grand jury for the most part is the prosecution side. The prosecutor goes to the grand jury and they're like, hey, here's the case. Well, without having the other side, the defense, put up a defense or have rebuttal witnesses or anything, yeah, it sounds like he's guilty if you only hear the one side, which is why, you know, okay, so you're indicted and you get to have a trial and you do get to put forth your evidence and witnesses and all that. So they got toward the end of the process, and what it really sort of kicked into high gear because Alvin Bragg offered Trump an opportunity to come in and testify before the grand jury, which Trump declined, and he had the right to do. But people who are in law are like, oh, whoa, that's generally the last thing that you would do. You've laid out your case, you've made your point, and then you're like, hey, you know, we're going to give you a chance to come in and say something if you want to say something before we basically vote on it. Trump declined. So at that point, all the people smarter than me in the law said, it looks like this is about to come to a close, and there's probably or likely to be an indictment soon. What soon is another story, but there's likely to be an indictment soon. You know, matter of days or week or two. So we were going into last weekend with this sort of percolating, like, is the grand jury gonna, you know, vote for an indictment? Then Trump's people threw a wrench in it, and they are like, oh, we have a witness that we want to present. Well, the witness was this attorney, I can't even think of his name. I think it was the Tucker Pena guy. And, you know, he was like, oh, I'm going to. So then the DA was like, OK, Michael Cohen, he's basically going to say something that impugns Michael Cohen, Trump's former attorney, who's now like the key witness. Right. He's like, I've seen this. He's produced evidence and it's not just his word. He's produced bank statements and documents and video and audio recordings and all these things over the last few years. So they've got a pretty strong case. This new attorney gets sort of put in there to discredit Michael Cohen. So they're like, okay, Michael Cohen, we want you to be on standby in case you need to rebut anything that he says. Well, the guy comes, he testifies, and then they're like, yeah, Michael, you can go home. Because whatever, what this attorney spoke to, everybody knows that Michael, everybody, even if you're not paying attention, everybody knows that Michael Cohen lied for Trump. He was Trump's fixer. He was in the tank. He was, you know, serving as the muscle behind Trump as a goon, as a, you know, whatever. So, you know, somebody coming forth and saying, yeah, he lied, that wasn't news to anybody. So nobody was, it was like, whatever, dude. So it was like, okay, he spoke. The grand jury didn't need to hear anything further. They didn't need Michael to, they didn't need Michael to come forth and, you know, justify anything. So that was that. So we went into the weekend sort of on verdict watch, right? On indictment watch, not verdict, on indictment watch. We went into the weekend thinking, this indictment could come down any moment. It didn't happen Friday. So it's like, okay, maybe it'll be Monday. Maybe it'll be Tuesday. Who knows? But in the meantime, Trump decides to insert himself and says, I'm going to be arrested on Tuesday. Which might suggest that the DA contacted his lawyers and said, you need to have your client surrender on Tuesday. That happens. And that's probably how it'll be. He's not likely to be arrested. They're not going to swoop in and, you know, take him, you know, by gun, you know, at gunpoint. And, you know, we're not likely to, in spite of what he says, is not likely to be a perp walk and put him in handcuffs and make him walk past a bank of, you know, journalists and reporters. That's just not generally how it happens at that level. At that level, it is like, you need to show up. They'll bring him in a back door, you know, fingerprint him, get his mug shot, do whatever, make him do a strip search, and then send him on his way. Now, knowing Trump, he'll go back out the front door and then he'll have a press conference. But, you know, they're not likely to keep him in custody because I think he's violent, but this particular charge is sort of nonviolent, right? He paid hush money to a porn star and then cooked the books to make it look like something else. But it was a campaign violation. So the question is, one question is, how serious is this particular charge? And frankly, it is a law. Well, let me back up. He did this payment to Stormy Daniels and her name is Stephanie Clifford. That's a given name, but Stormy Daniels, he did this payment to her like 2 weeks before the election. So it appears to be a campaign violation. It appears to be, you know, he had this affair with this person. It was about to come out. If it came out right before the election, people would be aghast. Oh my God, he cheated on his wife who had just had a baby. And, you know, he's a scoundrel and we can't vote for him. And this would be on top of or after that whole Access Hollywood tape where he's like, I'd like to grab women by the, you know, what, by the girl part. So to shut that up for the election purposes, he paid her off and then called it something else. Now, what he's trying to, so then he said he knew nothing about it. Then he admitted, well, I did know about it, but I didn't know, and I this, and I, you know, whatever. And his story has sort of changed. But the most recent story is he did it for his wife. It's like, you know, well, I'm married and I didn't want to hurt her. And both. And it's like, okay, so first of all, if you didn't want to hurt her, you wouldn't have done it. But okay, let's put that aside. I didn't want to hurt my wife, so I paid this person off. Well, why'd you wait to pay it off? Stormy'd been around. The affair happened in, like, I don't know, 2013 or something. It happened way before the election. So why are you waiting until 2 weeks before to do something? And then why didn't you just pay it off? You claim to be a billionaire. Why didn't you just write a check out of your personal account and pay it off? Instead, you have Michael pay it. So Michael goes and gets a loan against his house. And then you pay Michael back and you call it legal services. You don't call it Stormy Daniel payment payoff money. You call it something else. So it's all the machinations that they went through to pay this money to Stormy and then the payoff to pay Michael back. Right. And then, but even that, well, paying off a porn star, you know, paying hush money is not against the law. Might be stupid, it might be unfair, it might be a lot of things. It is not against the law. Miscategorizing it on your business paperwork is against the law, but it's a misdemeanor. But a misdemeanor that is done in furtherance or in conjunction with another law, that becomes a felony. So that is what really is the question about the Alvin Bragg thing. When he initially says, I'm not going to prosecute this, to now, something happened, some new information. So is it some tax evasion? Is it some, you know, state crime? And keep in mind, campaign violation is federal law. So what state law might he also broken in relation to Stormy Daniels? So that's sort of what pundits are trying to figure out. Nevertheless, Trump goes public and says, I'm going to be arrested on Tuesday. So everybody gets all, you know, in a dither because they're like, oh my God, is he going to jail? Is there going to be a perp walk? What happened? Blah, blah, blah. So there's all this activity over the weekend. Then Monday comes and then Tuesday comes. And then, so the grand jury was scheduled to meet on Tuesday. I'm sorry. I think they were scheduled to meet on Wednesday. So Tuesday, nothing happened. Wednesday, the grand jury didn't even meet. They were scheduled to meet. They didn't. They're supposed to meet today, but when they do meet today, are they going to, vote on this? Are they going to vote to indict him or are they not? So we still don't know. In the meantime, Trump raised $1.5 million over the weekend on this lie that he was going to be arrested on Tuesday. He had no indication that he was going to be arrested, but he keeps lying to the people and the people keep believing him and sending them their hard, well, I don't know if it's hard earned or not, but sending them his money. Sending him their money. And there's not, you know, and it could be a million people sending $5 at a time or $1 at a time, but it's madness. But he seems to be doing this kind of thing for two reasons. One, to make money, because he's a grifter. But two, he wants to control the narrative. He's trying to get people, and listen, here's where I'm about to tie all this together. He's trying to get the people to believe or to focus on what's happening in New York with Stormy Daniels and then talk that down because it's like, he paid money to a porn star, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, so if people are thinking about that or focused on that and thinking, why are they bothering him or this seems petty or whatever, they're not looking at the bigger picture and the other crimes. And the other crimes are the insurrection that special counsel Jack Smith has been in charge of, has been put in charge of the investigating the insurrection as well as the classified documents. So both of those are pretty big. and Fannie Willis in Georgia. So remember I said, she said imminent charges were imminent. So it sounds to me like she's pretty much ready. Her case is a big case, and I believe her case, just like Jack Smith's, but I think her case is likely to be a RICO charge. What is RICO, you ask? RICO is racketeering, influence, and corrupt organizations. Basically, it's a charge that they use when they're trying to bring down the mob. The racketeering, so there are certain kinds of charges that fall under, certain kinds of offenses that fall in under the RICO statutes. And that's like, you know, drug dealing, arson, bribery, you know, gambling, murder, kidnap, those kinds of things. The kinds of things that the mob does, right? But they do it as part of an enterprise. They do it as an organization, not a single person who does a thing. It's two or more people, but usually like a bigger group, a mob family or an organization or a corrupt enterprise, who then, you know, commit these crimes. So it's, you know, more than one crime, you know, and you're doing these crimes. And it's, how do you, you know, if you think about the mob or the Godfather or whatever, right? They're shaking people down. They're using this money to buy off these people, and they're bribing the cops to look that way. And then they've got these people over here that are, you know, whacking people. So there's murder involved. And then there's, you know, they're running the gambling dens and the paying off politicians and all that, because it's so big and so complex and so much going on. You need a mechanism to sort of tie all that together, tell this bigger story to a jury, and then you bring them all down for all this, for this body of work that they've done. That is what I think Fannie Willis is doing down in Georgia. She's pulling, because this was not just Trump saying, getting on the phone to Raffensperger and saying, hey, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, are you sure you counted all the votes? No, he's like basically threatening them, you know, bad things will happen if you don't do this, and just find me these votes. But in addition to calling Raffensperger, he called some woman, I think she was like the county clerk, and he's like, you know, you'll be a hero if you do this. So he's trying to get her to do something. Now we know that there was another call. We have not yet heard the call. I don't know who he called and what the call was about, but there was another recorded phone call. Then you have, like I said, you had Lindsey Graham from South Carolina down in Georgia. Why is Lindsey in South Carolina? You know, oh, I'm a senator. And I was, no. That dog don't hunt. All these people have been forced to testify. You got Mark Meadows down there in Georgia. He's supposed to be the chief of staff up here in DC, but he's down there. So all these people were working together. They're Rudy and Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell and all these people who were advancing the big lie, who were setting up these fake electors and training them and getting them and telling them what to do. All of that. That is an enterprise. That is a criminal enterprise. And it was a group of people that conspired, had a whole plan laid out to steal this election. And they went through Georgia. They also went through Arizona. They also went through Pennsylvania. They also went through Michigan. They went through a lot of places. They just happened to get this recording in Georgia. And they happened to have a DA down there, Fannie Willis, who's, you know, on the job. We don't know. She may be working with the other states. We don't know what she has, but she said imminent. So that would be a really serious charge if he got indicted for that this week. Similarly, if he got indicted for the January 6th insurrection, for telling the big lie and basically inciting or instigating the activities that happened on January 6th to, you know, to pressure Pence and to keep himself in office, to not certify the election for Joe Biden. So, and or you know, the classified documents of Mar-a-Lago, that's a different thing. That's not part of the election. That's a different thing, but it's as big because, as we know from documents that have been unsealed so far or that have been reported on, some have been unsealed. What we do know is the content of the classified documents he took had something to do with nuclear secrets of a foreign country. And so it's like, what was he doing with them? They may have some evidence that he took the documents, that he sold them. We know that there were copies of documents because one of his aides reported that, you know, they had made copies. So was he selling secrets? Was he? We don't know quite what he was doing with the documents. But unlike Pence and Biden, who, you know, maybe had some files in a box in their garage somewhere because they went away for the weekend and had some reports to review or whatever, and they just didn't turn them back or whatever, this was a different situation. So my suspicion is this. I say all this to say, so today's big number is 4, right? Because that's the number of cases we have. We got the hush money payments to Stormy Daniels. We got the January 6th insurrection. We got the classified documents, and we got the Georgia interference. So the big number is 4, those 4 cases. One of them, one or more of them, are likely to be indicted this week. I have this, my gut tells me that because the New York, the Stormy Daniels, not that it isn't against the law, but it is the less serious. It is the one that has the least serious national security implications. That maybe he's been asked to stand down so that these, you know, at least for a few days until maybe one of these other two can indict Trump. So while Trump is trying to get us to focus on New York and Alvin Bragg and Stormy Daniels so that he can control that narrative and get ahead of that, he's got us supposedly not really looking at these other three. And I think those other three are probably about as ready to come to fruition as any of them. I'm going to say this final piece classified documents case. Over the last couple of days, Jack Smith has done, the special counsel, he's done quite a bit to go before the judge and to compel one of Trump's lawyers to testify. That testimony is going to come tomorrow, on Friday, the 24th. So I don't know if that is a final piece, but apparently there's evidence that Trump, remember when I said that Trump's lawyers attested to they said, we have checked Mar-a-Lago, we've checked everything, and there are no other documents, and they signed a sworn statement. Well, his attorney, Corcoran, is the one who wrote this letter, this attestation letter. But he's not the one who signed it. He then told a different lawyer, Christina Bob, he told her to sign it. Now, why wouldn't he, if I was Christina Bob, I mean, this lets you know the quality of lawyers he gets. If somebody wrote, if I'm a lawyer and another lawyer is a lawyer and the lawyer writes this statement and then says, hey, Greer, sign this. My first question is, why don't you sign it? If they're not willing to sign it, why on earth would I sign it? But maybe that's just me. So Corcoran writes this letter, tells Christina Bob to sign it. She does, turns it in. Then the FBI goes back and searches, finds more documents. Therefore, the letter was a lie. So they're now getting Corcoran to come in and testify and explain himself. Why did you write this? Who told you? And it seems that he's sort of flipping on Trump. He doesn't want to go down. He doesn't want to lose his license. He doesn't want to go to jail. And it's like, well, Trump told me that there were no documents. So I took him at his word. I wrote this letter. And then I told Christina to sign it because I don't want my name on it. That's, you know, maybe how that's going to come out. Or he'll say, I just don't know. I don't remember. I don't recall. Whatever. All of it is BS. But if that particular piece, like who said, you know, somebody testifying or attesting to the fact that Trump was the ringleader behind that lie, that may be the final piece that Jack Smith needs for that documents case in Mar-a-Lago. So I'm thinking this week we're likely to see either the Mar-a-Lago or the Georgia go ahead of the Stormy Daniels in New York. And I think that they could all be sort of in rapid succession. But I actually think that Georgia's going to come first. And then within days, maybe, the documents case of Mar-a-Lago, and then follow that up with New York, all of which give Trump a massive headache, MAGA, make attorneys, get attorneys. It's like everybody is coming down. Again, if Georgia is a racketeering case, and we already know, because one of the jurors spoke out, one of the grand jury foreperson did some interviews a couple of weeks ago. She seems a little kooky, but you know, whatever. Bless her heart. But she's like, yeah, there were multiple. I think she's like a dozen people that she wouldn't give an exact number, but she alluded to maybe a dozen or more people. Well, that's part of what suggests to me racketeering. And there's been a couple of years that Fannie Willis has had to do this investigation. And maybe if they're going to bring in, you know, Congress people, senators, you know, Senator Graham and Mark Meadows and Rudy Giuliani and, you know, and others and Trump, and it'll be big. So I wanted to get in my two cents while I could be completely off base. Maybe Alvin Bragg will just, you know, indict Trump today based on the grand jury vote and the New York grand jury is different than the, that's different than, you know, the other grand juries that have been impaneled. So we don't know, but that's sort of the landscape that we're looking at. I hope I made it a little bit clearer for you, but at least now if you see an indictment, you'll understand a little bit better some of the backdrop of that, and we'll reconvene soon. So hope you have a wonderful day. I hope my son has a happy birthday, and I look forward to talking to you again. That was Politics with a capital G.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Capital G. As always, you can find show and host information at capitalgpodcast.com and even more information and commentary on the Capital G blog, which you can also access through capitalgpodcast.com. If you liked what you heard, please share the show with your friends and subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast platform.